Welcome back to another episode of Those 80s Gays with Jenny P. Warner. It's been a moment. What's been happening, everybody? This episode's going to be a little bit different. It's, I'm actually recording it on a new mic. I'm just trying to get my levels all sorted out. So bear with me if my voice sounds a little bit different. What's been happening in my... Do you know, again, I'm just so consumed by work, my dogs, the garden. I am looking for, I'm actually looking for a property at the moment. I'm really, I don't know whether I spoke about this, but I stopped in Bangalore on my way back from Sydney recently, and you know what, Bangalore, as soon as I stopped there, like, I remember going to Bangalore when I was about 21 years old, and I fell in love with the place. Now, let me tell you, every time I say Bangalore to one of my friends, they're like, isn't that where Ivan Milat dumped all the bodies? No, that's the Bangalore Forest. Bangalore, that I have fallen in love with many, many, many years ago, Bangalore is 15 minutes inland from Byron Bay. So I remember going there when I was about 21 years old, and I fell in love with Bangalore, and I kind of knew, well, I want to say I knew back then that I would end up living there, but I don't know whether I really thought that far ahead. Like, at 21, are you really thinking about those massive life, you know, events and planning where you're going to retire? Pushing 40 now. Like, I'm months away from 40, not years, months. And I've been back to Bangalore numerous times since I was 21, and I've always fallen in love with it. Like, I've always known that this is where I want to spend the rest of my life. It's where I want to be. So I stopped in Bangalore on my way back from Sydney very recently, and yeah, you know, it's just got that vibe. Like, it's exactly where I want to be. It feels like home. It feels like home. The only thing is, I don't know whether I really want to be living in New South Wales, but it is just over the border. I mean, it's not too far over the border. So I'm pretty sure I could maintain my full-time job in Queensland. I really only go into the office a couple of times a week. So, you know, I'm kind of thinking now, I want to move to Bangalore. So I've told some friends that I've been to see a home in Bangalore. The first one I went and saw, I really didn't fall in love with. It was beautiful on, in pictures, and it was beautiful in real life as well, I've got to say, but the location wasn't great. The block size wasn't fabulous. And obviously, like, being down near Byron, it's got that ripple effect of Byron pricing at the moment. What I haven't told my friends is that I've done numerous trips to Bangalore in the last few weeks looking at property. Even just a little bit outside of Bangalore, I've been looking at different areas. And I'm kind of really feeling like I'm making some headway with finding something that I might particularly like. So that's probably my big news at the moment, is just kind of like, I want to relocate. I think I'm ready to have a bit more land, have a bit more of a yard, take it a bit slower, be in a beautiful area that I've always fallen in love with, always been in love with. So yes, that's something pretty major going on at the moment. My other major thing is, and I know I've spoken about, very, very briefly, like, blink and you miss it, touched on this in a previous episode, Ozempic. I'm on Ozempic, so I've just had I'm on my week 6 of being on Ozempic. And I got to tell you, it has, this is why I haven't been able to record a podcast in a few weeks. And it's why there's been a bit of a gap in continuity with my podcast. I'm out of energy. The Ozempic has just zapped me. So I went to the doctor. I said, I really want to go on Ozempic. He said, no problem, gave me a prescription. The problem with a prescription is, it's easy. Well, I found it easy to get the prescription. After ringing every chemist in Greater Brisbane, it was very hard to find a chemist that would actually give me Ozempic. I didn't actually find a chemist that would give me Ozempic. I ended up having to go through a compounding pharmacy, so which was fine. It's the same kind of price structure. You start off on Ozempic on the lowest dosage, which is 0.25 milligrams. You do that for 4 weeks, and then every 4 weeks you move up a dosage. So I'm on my second week of my next dosage, which is 0.5 milligrams. Yeah. Eventually, it will get up to 2.5 milligrams. It's a weekly injection. For those that don't know what Ozempic is, so Ozempic has been around for a long time. It's a drug that diabetics use for insulin levels, and they found like a lot of diabetics that were going on Ozempic were losing weight. So they did like tests and everything, and basically it became a bit of a weight loss wonder drug, and it's been really hard because of that. It's really hard to get your hands on, so a lot of chemists will stock it, but they only stock for diabetics. So you'll be asked if you go to the chemist to get it, is this for diabetes or for weight loss? It will say, like, it'll have some kind of indicator on your script, and if it's for weight loss, they won't provide it to you because they need to ensure that they're providing it to diabetics for their medical treatment before us fatties for our weight loss treatment. But I'm gonna go on a bit of a rant now. So here's my thinking. I'm well aware, like, I got a lot of stick for going on Ozempic when I first kind of said I was going to go on it. A lot of my friends were like, A, you're not fat, and B, you're depriving people of medication that actually need it. Well, I'm gonna be upfront and say, go fuck yourself. Because here's how I look at it. And this is my opinion only. I represent nothing other than my own opinion. And I'm really not that well versed in diabetes. So I'm probably getting a lot of it wrong, but here's what I think. The type of diabetes that you need to have to be prescribed Ozempic is where you've majority of the time, you've led a lifestyle of excess, and it leads you to a situation where you then need to, you've become diabetic through bad decisions. So if you could stop those bad decisions at a much younger age and not have to deal with the repercussions of, obesity and being a diabetic and all that, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? So I'm just getting in early. That's all I'm saying is I'm getting in early. So my problem is, look, I've put on some weight over the last probably 12 to 18 months. My problem is, like, I obviously, like, I live on my own. And I'm a very lazy eater. I don't really overeat. It's not like I'm snacking on all day. I'm not, I wouldn't say like I'm a pig or anything like that. But when I might survive from the time I get up of a morning till when I get home, I'm probably running off 2 coffees all day.
That's it.
That's it. My voice just cracked a little bit there. That's it. So I'm like, I'm on 2 coffees. So I'll come home, I'll do, afternoon stuff. I'll walk the dogs, I'll feed the dogs, I'll kind of, do stuff around the house, catch up with people, have friends over, whatever. But then I get home and I'm finally exhausted and I'm hungry. So I make dinner. Now I will make, like, say I make spaghetti bolognese for dinner. I'm making, like, I've got all the ingredients to make it, and it might make, like, for a family of four, I sit down and eat probably half of that. So it's that one meal a day that my portion control is so out of whack. And because, like, I don't really stop running until quite late of an evening, I'm eating too late, too much. So my body just stores it. So, like, I'm not pigging out on lollies and everything all day and every day. I don't drink soda. Like I drink soda water, but just soda water on its own. And if I do want something sweet, I'll have like a little bit of diet cordial in my soda water every now and then. So I've started on the Ozempic. Let's get back on track. And I just clothes were starting to like I'd put an outfit on and I'd be like, whoa, when did this become so tight? And I realized I'd put on a little bit of weight. So I don't regret the decisions I've made to put on the weight. Like I've had a lot of fun putting on the weight along the way. One good thing for me is I am no longer really drinking. So I would be lucky to have maybe two drinks, ooh, every 2 to 3 months. I really don't drink much alcohol at all. So that's been really good because alcohol, obviously, if I drink wine, like lots of white wine, I could drink a bottle of wine and the next week I know I'm going to be like 2 or 3 kilos heavier. It just seems to really pack the weight on me when I'm drinking wine. And I do love my Pinot Grigio. So I just don't drink it anymore. So I'm on the Ozempic and it normally comes when you get it from a normal chemist, it comes in like an EpiPen style. So where you just hold it to your stomach and press it. Like an EpiPen, and it shoots it in, and it's done. I didn't realize getting it from a compounding pharmacy, it's not an EpiPen style. They actually give it to you in 4 needles. So they give you 4 needles, and it's, one per week. And I was freaking out. I'm like, holy shit, I can't inject myself with an actual needle. Like, I just can't do that. I get Botox, I get filler, I've had threading, I've had everything done, but I can't. It's not like I do it myself. I don't sit in the mirror and inject my own Botox. I get it done by someone and usually with my eyes closed. And I love my Botox needles. There's something about those little pricks going in all over your face. It's just, oh, I love it. It's intoxicating. But I couldn't inject myself. So my girlfriend does it for me every week. And first injection, I'm at her house. She injects me. Normally, after I've been to her house, I catch up with her once a week. And normally, on the way home, that one day per week, I always stop and get like a burger or like a McDonald's burger or a Hungry Jack's burger or something like that. And I'm laughing, going, oh, we're injecting now, and I'm going to go have a bloody burger on the way home. Within the hour, the thought of food absolutely was repulsing me. They say that sometimes you get headaches on Ozempic. I didn't really get too strong a headaches. Maybe like half a cracker here and there. I'm still pretty much like that. Like, food has become less revolting to me, but I can't eat much of it. I really, and when I do eat, I'm really sick afterwards. So I might eat a meal once every 2 to 3 days, and then I'm sick. So kind of it defeats the purpose. But I'm juicing a lot. I'm keeping like my vitamins and everything else up in other ways, and getting nutrients from, juicing and things like that. I actually went to Coles or Woolworths the other night and bought baby food in jars because it's like a small jar of baby food would last me 3 days, but I can have a teaspoon of what did I have last night? Oh, not the last night, the night before, I had roast lamb and vegetables. I had a teaspoon of it out of baby food, and yeah, that's all I can really stomach. So I'm not weighing myself. I did weigh myself after the first. Now, I think it was, I'm getting the numbers wrong because my head's just all over the place lately. I'm pretty sure it was. In 8 days, I lost 6 kilos, or it could be 6 days, I lost 8 kilos, something like that. It was quite like, substantial weight loss in those first few days. But I'm actually not weighing myself anymore because I find getting on the scales really triggering. It really triggers me. So I'm more going by how I feel in clothes. So I tried on quite a few outfits the other night when I was getting ready for a birthday party. Clothes that I haven't put on in quite a while. Clothes that last time I put on didn't fit. And when I put them on this time, they were loose. So that's a good thing. I'm just going by how clothes fit. So I'm not tracking weight loss by the kilos. It's purely about how clothes fit. And I've always had body image issues. Like, I would really, like, I think we all do, at the core of us, have some kind of body dysmorphia. I am most well aware that I have it. But I think, especially in the gay community, that we have unrealistic expectations of how our bodies should look compared to imagery that we see, you know, whether it be in magazines or on TV shows. The gay, a standard gay man in the media is represented really, really toxically. You know, generally white, good looking, a professional, six pack, very defined body. You know, like, it really is a misconception, and it's a really bad stereotype of gay people in the media. Like, I know we've come a long way and we represent many, many different facets of every type of person now, but really, like, the gay community is so, so hard on each other and ourselves. We have such unrealistic expectations of how our bodies should look, and the moment we look slightly variated to what we think we should look like, we just are so self-critical. And I'm the first to admit that I do that myself. So I've always had body image issues. This isn't going to be the be-all and end-all solving everything, but it's definitely going to get some kilos off. And it's funny because people, like, you know, a lot of people in my friendship circle, when I've spoken about being on Ozempic, they're all like, oh, but you don't need it. You're not fat. You're not fat. And I guess to look at me, you probably wouldn't look at me and go, oh, wow, he's obese. But I am 39 and I'm feeling the lumpy bits more than ever. And I used to exercise a lot. I used to run, God, 10, 15 kilometers every day. And I was a lot bigger than what I was once upon a time, but then I went through a stage of really getting into exercise and controlling my diet, and I was a lot skinnier than what I was. I really dropped quite a lot of weight and probably got to the unhealthy side of being skinny. But that's me. Like, I'm a control freak, and I, you know, I was having this conversation with someone at work the other day, and I really, really identified in myself that I really am quite a control freak in my life. And I, you know, my car has to be immaculate. My home has to be immaculate. Everything has to match. I have to have, you know, everything's controlled. Everything's very measured. Probably down even to the information that I give to those closest around me. It's very controlled. It's very measured. In the past, it's probably been, I don't think consciously, but it probably definitely has subconsciously been very, you know, I drip feed the information I want my friends to know about me and my life to them, because it's a control thing for me. I don't really want everyone knowing me warts and all. I have a couple of very, very close friends that do. And we kind of know each other. We know where all the bodies are buried. Like, you know, I know them inside out. They know me inside out. But my circle that I keep like that is extremely tight. So I think it all leads into one another. So therefore, I'm also extremely critical and controlling of how I want my body to look. So that's the big O at the moment, the big O Zempic. It seems to be working. I feel better looks-wise, but I'm going to tell you, like, I struggle with my fatigue because there's nothing in my system. Like, you know, like, it's, I don't know. The fatigue, I Googled some of the side effects of Ozempic, and fatigue apparently is like something like 0.004% of people have reported severe fatigue. I must be one of those people, because all I want to do is sleep. I think I could lie down in the Queen Street Mall in peak hour and have a sleep. I could fall asleep in 10 seconds. I can fall asleep right now if I just kind of like close my eyes for a second. So it's definitely for the fatigue that's doing it for me. So that's kind of what's happening at my life at the moment, and it's all about the searching for a property. The time I'm watching lots of, well, I'm catching the start of a lot of TV shows and movies. I don't quite make it through a whole TV show or movies. I gotta tell you though, so for those gays or listeners out there that watch The Housewives, you obviously all know that I am a real Housewives fanatic. So very, very happy that we can now talk about Sydney, Real Housewives of Sydney season two finally coming back. So the only original cast members are going to be Nicole and Chrissy. Great choice. Would have loved to have seen Victor. Actually, you know what? I would have loved to have seen Victoria come back. I really think I'm confused why Maddie's not coming back. Like, she's got so much going on in her life. So we're not getting Maddie, we're not getting Melissa, we're not getting Victoria. Let's face it, Melissa's a lovely person, but she wasn't, she didn't, she was kind of like a bookend. She didn't bring that much, you know, but that's, if everyone bought the same amount, then it would be just too explosive and too full on. So Melissa suited it, but I don't think she, yeah, I think one season's enough for her. And we're not getting the evil twins. We're not getting, do I even need to say their names? We're not getting Lisa Oldfield, and we're not getting Athena X, Lavendi, Lavandi, whatever. Thank God, because you know what? I think we would probably be on to season four or five of The Real Housewives of Sydney by now if it hadn't have been for Athena and Lisa ruining season one. It was just mainly Athena. She ruined that show. It was still a good show. You know, there were a lot of reports about it being nasty for nasty's sake. I don't think it was. I think if you watch some of the international versions of The Real Housewives, we've seen a lot nastier shenanigans go on in seasons than we did in Sydney. But I think Athena X was just so toxic. And Lisa Oldfield was, I think she's good TV, but she's just not balanced on reality. Like, she's some of the things that she would post on social media and the bite backs that she would give to people, she's vile. Just a vile. I think she's got a lot of healing to do. I think she's just a really unhappy, miserable woman. So season two of Sydney is coming back. So I have heard who's going to be in it, but I can't say anything yet because I was sworn to secrecy when I was in Sydney very recently. So that'll be exciting. That'll be back. I think they're starting to plan to film quite soon, and I think from a little birdie that's told me that it's possibly airing in November this year, so not too far away. That must be maybe what, like a 3 or 4 month shooting schedule and then some editing time, and then we'll be in the thick of promotion and debuting season two, which will be really exciting. New Jersey. Oh, New Jersey's just wrapped up. So they've, season finale was this week, and then they're doing a one-off episode, Teresa's wedding, and then they've got the reunion. I am looking forward to the reunion because from all accounts, everything I'm hearing about the reunion is it is explosive. Like, Teresa has to be, I think I've heard that Teresa has to be physically restrained, and it's the most volatile reunion, and we've seen some pretty volatile New Jersey reunions. I have started listening. So Andy Cohen has a new book out. It's called The Daddy Diaries. And at first I was like, oh, you're such a daddy. Like, it's leading so, he's really leaning into that. I'm a daddy, like, you know, big silver fox. But then I remembered he's got two children, so he actually is a daddy, and it is more about his life being a single gay father with two children, and his children are beautiful. So I've started reading his book, which I really probably will have wrapped up by, oof, probably the end of this week. It's such an easy read, it's such a good read, and it's got so much tea and gossip in it that I just can't put it down. No word on Melbourne. I really don't think Melbourne's going to come back anytime soon. I think if Sydney's decent, they'll run forward with Sydney, and I think Melbourne will just be completely over. I really feel Melbourne, like, I've read articles and I've talked to some of the housewives from Melbourne, and it's dead in the water. Like, last season really killed Melbourne. So Other than that, I don't really have anything new Real Housewives related. I'm still. Do you know what I'm doing at the moment, though? I'm really into listening to true crime podcasts. I've listened to some in the past, and like I really love true crime podcasts. But now, because like I'm at home so much, I often put podcasts on and listen to them around the house while I'm doing things. Especially while I'm working throughout the day, I'll often put a podcast on because it's quite relaxing for me. So the other night I was listening to this, and I love listening to podcasts where it involves like locations that I know, like Brisbane, or you know, things that I can identify. Like everyone knows about like Sharon Phillips and things like that. But I was listening to a podcast recently about Betty Shanks. So Betty Shanks was murdered in like the 1950s in a suburb in Brisbane called Grange, or some people say The Grange, but it's actually just Grange. It's like saying the Fortitude Valley. No, the suburb is just Fortitude Valley. So the suburb of Grange, where she was murdered, there's a lot of controversy around her murder. So I was listening to this podcast really late at night, and I'm like, I'm Googling, you know, Google mapping where she lived and where she was found dead and where she was murdered and all this. And like, it's quite gruesome, it's quite macabre, but it's really interesting. So it's like 11 o'clock at night, and I'm like, I'm gonna keep listening to this podcast. I'm gonna go out there, and I'm gonna go for a drive. So I drove out to Grange, which is only like 10 minutes down the road from where I live. And I parked where Betty Shanks had been murdered. So I'm sitting there in the car listening to this podcast. It's like where I'd parked, I was under this massive tree by this school field that was completely black. And then the podcast started talking about how this lady who'd been walking in front of Betty Shanks before her murder had seen a man in a brown suit leaning against a tree by the school fields. And I realized that's exactly where I was parked. Oh, just like I was spine tingling, spine tingling. So I like kind of scared myself a little bit too much, and I had to drive. Like I was like, oh, gotta get out of here. So I drove home, and then, you know, as I pulled in the driveway, I made sure all the security lights are on for to getting, you know, up to the house, and double checked all the doors were locked and everything like that. So I'm really, yeah, it was a really fascinating case. There's a lot more to it. And the problem is, because she'd been murdered in the 50s, probably most people that or anyone that was really involved in that has probably passed away. Like, you know, we're talking that's 70 years ago. And she was in her 20s at the time, so there was a lot of talk that she'd been having an affair with someone on her street, or a married man. There were these interesting marks left on her body that couldn't be identified, and some people believed that she had actually been struck by the killer riding a motorbike. So they mowed her down on a motorbike and then left her for hours, and then come back to actually finish killing her. The way she was found too, like it was, she'd been pushed over a fence into a yard and obviously murdered. But when they went looking for her, they couldn't see her because the yard dipped down from the footpath maybe like half a meter back then. So it wasn't flush with the footpath. It wasn't an easy, but when the next morning came, she was in someone's yard, completely dead. It was really, really interesting. So just, you know what, if you're interested in true crime and you live in Brisbane, or you don't even live in Brisbane and you just want to know about the Betty Shanks story, just type Betty Shanks, Shanks, into Spotify, and it will come up with loads of episodes. I can't remember which one I listened to, but it was they're all fairly good. Another one I've really gotten into is Michelle Laurie's true crime podcast. She's got a really, really good true crime podcast, so I'd give that one a listen if you're interested in true crime. But I always like I like listening to podcasts about true crime, the where it's happened in Australia, because I can identify areas and identify places and things like that. But I will happily watch on TV true crime documentaries about anywhere. It's just fascinating. I've got my outfit picked out. Well, I've bought several outfits actually already, and they might be a bit loose by then, who knows? But yeah, I've got a wedding to go to in August, which I'm really excited for. So yeah, listen, I didn't mean this to waffle on so long, just a really kind of quick update as to why the pod hasn't been up every couple of weeks like it normally is. Next episode of the podcast will be the season finale. It'll be season three's season finale. Can you believe this has been? We've gotten through three seasons, almost ready to move on to our fourth season. But next episode will be the season finale. So there'll be a lot more juicy stuff in that one. This is more just a bit of a, hey, I'm still here. Don't forget me. Don't forget me. But anyway, I'm going to go and have a lovely day, night, weekend, weekday, wherever you are. Don't forget to follow Those 80s Gays on Instagram at Those 80s Gays. And you can follow me on Instagram as well at Danny P. Warner. I do have a private account and I vet my follower requests very, very hard because I like it to stay very small and very select. I am verified on Instagram now as well. So you can find me with the blue tick at Danny P. Warner. And if you like this, wherever you're listening to it, give it a 5-star review or a review of any sort. I don't really care. Just show some love, do what you do. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.